Good afternoon. Let me welcome you all on behalf of the United States Institute of Peace, on behalf of Dan Server, who normally should have been here and moderating this event, who regrets very much he couldn't be here. He is traveling, but who sends his regards. I would in particular like to welcome the Deputy Prime Minister of Serbia, Mr. Božidar Djelić, to the Institute, and thank you very much for taking the time to spend a few minutes with us today, and also like to welcome the ambassador and the delegation. I don't have to spend a lot of your time and the Deputy Prime Minister's time mentioning who the Deputy Prime Minister, Mr. Djelić, is. Let me just confirm that he is currently holding the position of Deputy Prime Minister. He is in charge of European integrations, sustainable development, poverty reduction strategy, cooperation with international financial institutions, and in the latter capacity, he is also the governor for Serbia at the World Bank. I know you have a much bigger curriculum, but let me just mention that. Mr. Djelić was Minister of Finance and Economy in the government of Serbia from 2001 to 2004, he is credited with overseeing one of the fastest and most successful public finance reforms in the countries in transition. And then let me finally say that Mr. Djelić is maybe one of the persons in the best position to underline the merits of both United States and France, because Mr. Djelić graduated from the Institut d'Etudes Politiques in Paris in 1987 and then received a Master of Business at Harvard Business School in 1991. You are, as I say, in a better position than anybody to explain the merits of both the United States and France.
I don't know if I can explain the merits
but,
of France.
But not today, please. Not today.
I don't know. Call.
We are grateful you're here. We know that Serbia, these are very important times for Serbia. Serbia are facing many important challenges, and I think we are here to listen to you, and I would like to hand over. Once again, Mr. Djelić, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Sorensen. It's always a challenge when you come to the United States and you come from Serbia. Sometimes you are acutely aware that people will not only listen to you, but to some kind of meta language, looking at every single sentence and word to try to find a little slobo in you, to try to see if there is still the same software agitating you. The truth is that I'm one of the 23 people who voted for the extradition of Slobodan Milošević to The Hague. So with my colleagues, we have now lessons to learn about how to fight Milosevic and extreme streams of our society. Before I proceed, I'd like to say that this is also an emotional coming from me here, because last time I was here, I was addressing jointly this crowd by the late Prime Minister Zoran Djindjic. He covered at that time the politics and the defense aspects, and I was covering the economics and the finance. He's not here anymore, and I claim that part of that is because the West, chiefly America, did not fully listen to what he had to say, what we had to say. At that time, it was to leave a little bit of time to time for us to deflate the image of Slobodan Milošević in the public opinion of Serbia, to try him in our country for the many crimes that he committed, and then, of course, to extradite him to The Hague. In the event, Dr. Zoran Djindjic had to do it on his own. He protected us all, but nobody was strong enough to protect him from the people who were afraid they would be the next one to go to The Hague. And here I am today to tell you that hopefully America and the West will this time listen a bit more to the reformers in Serbia. Please change your software, change the approach. I'm not asking for you necessarily to love or to like us, but please look at the facts. Because during my studies in the States, one thing I learned is that facts are stubborn, and then at the end of the day, they are the best guide for action. And what we hear today from the news in Vienna, where the negotiations on the status of Kosovo and Metohija are proceeding is that finally some facts are brought to the table, and that gives us some hope. And I hope that in the weeks to come, the policy of the United States in particular will be ever more led by facts and not by prejudice, by the wish to provide for long-standing stability for all involved. And what I can assure you on behalf of the government of Serbia, and there is no divide here between President Tadic and Prime Minister Koštunica, is that you will find with Serbia a credible, stable, reliable, reasonable partner to come to an agreed outcome. Now, before I move on to the topic at hand, and I imagine that that's what's of most interest to you all, that is those negotiations on Kosovo and Metohija, let me give you a few facts about Serbia that, because of the prevalence of that theme in the public debate, in particular here in the United States about the Balkans, Serbia, and our country and the region, let me give you a few facts about Serbia right now. Do you know that Serbia will be the country with the fastest economic growth in Europe this year, with 7.3%? Do you know that Serbia will be the only country in Southeastern Europe which will have 3 years in a row foreign direct investments which will be bigger than 10% of its GDP? Do you know the nationality of the second largest source of foreign direct investment in Serbia? The United States of America. To those who think that we have become a Russian dominion, as one European Minister of European Affairs told me the other day being 2 weeks ago, oh, are you already a Russian Sputnik? The investment of Russia is 10 times smaller than the one of America, and they rank number 12. Are we interested in having Russian investment? Yes, in the very same way that, for instance, President Sarkozy is interested in taking a stake in Gazprom, the very same way that Chancellor Angela Merkel is trying to find a way to stabilize their energy supplies and find a way to tap the very many opportunities of the Russian market. That is the approach of Serbia. And no, we will not privatize anything without a proper appointed advisor. And they tend to be American. For the case of our oil industry, this is Merrill Lynch. For our aircraft company, Yat Airways, this is Rothschilds. It will be an open competition. And I wish that the Exxons and the others would show up. But at the end of the day, it's the one who will be the best who will win. And that was the case in the last 7 years, and that's how it's going to be in the weeks and the months and the years to come in Serbia as well. Maybe you don't know, but Serbia right now is going to face a biggest cycle of investments in its infrastructure. Of course, after not even after the arrival of Milosevic to power, but a good 10 years before he came to power, investments in infrastructure have stopped. So we will have a wave of about 3 to 5 billion euro of investments in that area in each of the 5 to 10 years to come. That opens very big opportunities in energy, in road construction, in cargo centers, in making sure the Danube is, as it's showing its potential now, becomes one of the main routes for hauling goods and people in Europe. And also, after the ratification of all countries concerned of the CEFTA agreement, we have now a free trade arrangement with countries in our vicinity, which represent 30 million customers. Serbia, and I'm the chief negotiator, as you mentioned, Mrs. Oldmer, we have just finished the negotiations with the European Union on the Stabilization Association Agreement, which provide for a stable opening of the European markets to Serbian companies, but also a progressive opening of our market to those who come from the European Union. Put on top of that a free trade arrangement with Russia, a little gift from Yeltsin to Milosevic that everybody is happy to keep, and you see that what geography has gave us, that is a central place in that part of Europe, is slowly, finally, hopefully emerging into a major economic opportunity for us, but also for the entire region. And through trade, economy, work, business, profits, I think that in the years to come, we will see a transformation of the Balkans that nobody could imagine. The way that when I was 24, and my first foray in economic policy was as an advisor to the then Prime Minister of Federal Yugoslavia, Ante Marković. And nobody could imagine that that country, who was clearly in line to be the first in that region to join the European Union, could explode, and that all of this could end in so much tragedy. I think that in the same way, we can so easily imagine a future where it will not be only Serbia growing at 6 to 7%, because figures show that all the countries in the region have similar growth rates, that the entire Southeastern Europe will be what Central Europe was in the last decade, that is the last growth frontier of Europe. So not everything is sad, not everything is source of concern in the region. No, Serbia is not only a basket case. Yes, there are many opportunities, and indeed, solving in an appropriate manner the issue of Kosovo and Metohija, on which I'll be speaking now, is one of the very important preconditions to be able to capture this opportunity, which is within reach. After having a discussion with Mr. Dan Fried and Ms. Jude Lancy in the National Security Council and a few people on the Hill, what I can tell you is that I'm going to leave today, tonight, Washington, with more, I would say, optimism, a guarded optimism, on the fact that the United States are actually more ready to entertain such a negotiated solution. Not favoring Serbs, but certainly not only favoring Kosovo Albanians. And I think that the efforts provided and the new framework of the Troika, with clearly at the leadership Ambassador Ischinger from Germany, are starting to yield some limited, but I think very encouraging results. So let me stop now a little bit about the issue of probably of highest interest to all of you here, and then I'll say a few words about the next steps of what is going to happen in Serbia and in the region, and probably the best thing then is to stop and to open a dialogue, because I understand that I'm talking to an extremely sophisticated crowd here of people to whom I don't need to give the basics. So on Kosovo and Metohija, the important thing to realize is that Serbia is constructive and realistic. Yesterday, we have seen a response of the Serbian negotiating team to the 14 points which were introduced in the debate by the Troika. We did not like everything in the 14 points, of course. But this time, like was the case in any other moment of those negotiations, Serbia was always present at the table. We are not leaving the negotiating table. We will not leave the negotiating table. We will want to negotiate to the very last moment when negotiations can yield results. And yes, we are not of the opinion that one should impose an artificial deadline such as December 10th if, as we see, some progress is being made. Does it mean that Serbia wants to drag its feet? Does it mean that we want to move to a frozen conflict and have this sitting there for decades? No. It is, in fact, in the interest of Serbia to find a negotiated settlement as soon as possible. On the other hand, I can assure you, and the Serbian constitution and at least three resolutions of our parliament, which bind us all as public servants, would show we will never accept an independent Kosovo and Metohija. Why? It's not a question of stubbornness. It's not a question of unwillingness to share European values. It's not out of unwillingness to accept that terrible things have happened during the Milosevic years. It's rather because there is no reason to set a dangerous precedent of breaking up a peaceful, democratic country which is ready to negotiate. It will go outside of international law. It would go outside of what the UN Charter is indicating, and it will set a very dangerous precedent. And thank God, all involved, including the European Union, have come to understand that this is a potentially very dangerous precedent, that some frozen conflicts could become hotter, that this, rather than through a negotiated settlement, giving strength to democrats in Belgrade and Pristina alike, demonstrating finally after 15 years that even in the Balkans, when the Serbian government says we will not use force, and we will not use force under any circumstances, and when we say we will want only international law to be applied, this is the best way to strengthen the mainstream, the moderates, the pro-Europeans in Serbia, but also in the region. Because it will be the proof that doing it the European, doing it the civilized way, yields better results than trying to fight. Finally. And that would serve, first, as an excellent example for any other potential flashpoint, and two, there is no better way to restrain other extremists, including in Belgrade, than keeping Serbia together. because then nobody in Belgrade will have any claim or any argument to say, how about looking at the peace of a neighboring country? The way that Serbia wants its territorial integrity to be protected, we recognize and fully support the territorial integrity of Bosnia and Herzegovina, of Macedonia, of all our neighbors. And that's the best way not to reopen this Pandora box of disintegration of the post-Yugoslav and the post-Soviet space that was successfully closed at the Dayton Agreement. And you know, often we hear from the international circles, well-meaning, competent, smart people saying, oh God, we have to learn from the mistakes of Dayton. Wait a minute. 12 years of peace. Criminality rates which are amongst the lowest in Europe in Bosnia and Herzegovina. People crossing the boundaries, internal boundaries, with no papers. Commerce, growth, and investments growing now. And all by difficult, the remaining reforms are achievable, and we can see that even if there is a difficult conflict, one can keep one country together. And it's not an argument to say because there was a conflict, Serbia should be broken up, because there was an even tougher conflict happening in Bosnia, and it was kept together. And there was a conflict also in Macedonia, and it was kept together. And there's absolutely no arguments to try to break up Serbia. Now, what are the elements of a possible settlement? It is on public record now. The Serbian delegation has responded to each of the 14 points. As you can see, this is a very constructive approach. We are ready to play ball. What does it mean? First, I'm the chief negotiator for Serbia for the accession to the European Union. We do not pretend for me to be the chief negotiator for the EU for Kosovo and Metohija. I was with the delegation here talking with the heads of the IMF and the World Bank, and indeed, in case there is a negotiated settlement, we agree for our province Kosovo and Metohija having a direct membership in those institutions and therefore having access to the credits which are so badly needed to provide for a future in this province as well. We also are ready to accept representations abroad in the areas of commerce, of culture, for Kosovo and Metohija, but we are not ready to accept embassies. In a way that we are not ready to accept a seat in the United Nations for Kosovo and Metohija. At the same time, we are ready to, in the areas through which we will come, and now I will not give you a laundry list of the elements which are under discussion, health, education, and so forth. Everything is up for negotiation. The only thing which is not, as far as Serbia is concerned, open for negotiation is breaking up our country. It's not to have a seat in the United Nations. The Ahtisaari plan that we rejected because it was directly leading to an independence of Kosovo and Metohija, we think that rather than having light armed forces as is written there, there should be no armed forces. And for the foreseeable future, the best way is to have an international force, ideally a European one or a UN-backed one, being present over there. Finally, of course, as far as the border crossings are concerned, toward Albania, toward Macedonia, Montenegro, one would be well advised to have a very heavy presence of the European Union, and don't expect me to badmouth anyone there, but those who are present here know very well that the traffickings, either in cigarettes, on gasoline, in arms, in drugs, human trafficking, many problems are exported from the region precisely because of a lack of oversight and order, law and order present there. And at the end of the day, if you look at what we're saying, I think we're not asking for much. And in fact, the gist of the discussion with the US administration here and all the other friends we have been meeting now, in fact, in a few hours I will go to Berlin in order to entertain and discuss with our German counterparts. One has to recognize the value of a negotiated settlement. I touched upon some of those elements, but it means also that we will emerge from those negotiations unhappy, probably, both sides, and looking the way that Europeans look when they come out of those very difficult negotiations. And life goes on, and we change the topic, and it's time to work on something else. And indeed, in Serbia there's an unemployment rate of 20%. We need to halve it in the next 4 years. I don't know exactly the figures in Kosovo and Metohija because our statistical office is not collecting figures there. For sure, I don't believe there are 2 million Albanian Kosovars there. There's a reason why a census was always refused since 1971, despite efforts of several heads of UNMIK in a way that it has never been done also in Albania. That's also play with the figures. It's not true that the disbalance between the people is so big. It's not 90 to 10. But at any rate, the unemployment rate in Kosovo, if I look at what UNMIK and UNOSEC or the World Bank has been publishing, seems to be a staggering 70%. I don't know if it's true, but certainly it's very high. And definitely, there's a need also to provide for a much better future for everybody in Pristina, Kosovska Mitrovica, in Leposavić, in Prizren, in Peć, everywhere. And when we come to this negotiated settlement, there's a whole list of common projects where when the sheer interest of people is taking hold, you will see how fast we will work together. Energy, water, finding the missing persons, making sure that people are relocated where they were expelled from. So many things where, and you look at the topography of Kosovo and Metohija, extremely high and tall mountains toward every country in the vicinity of Serbia, but for the Serbia proper, not. So therefore, life will take on, we will change this thing, and rather than still being into this Balkanic disintegration mood, we should get into European mood of integration and progress. And I think at this point of time that the talk, which is an overlay of some of the topics I've been discussing here, which are institutional links that are being discussed, is really the way forward. Of course, at this point of time, the positions being expressed are not close to each other. But, you know, to some extent, one might say that with a significant push and goodwill on all sides involved, we might just be able not to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. It could just be the turning point for the Balkans. It could just be the turning point for many of the problems that could be opened in case this issue is not properly addressed. And so, dear ladies and gentlemen, dear friends, in conclusion, I would like to say that our country has undergone many transformations, but for the last 7 years after the overthrow of Milosevic, with some ups and downs in the collaboration with the Hague Tribunal, and here I can only tell you that we are completely committed to find, arrest, and extradite the remaining four fugitives. Indeed, there have been two arrests and extraditions in the first 4 months of the work of our government. And let me give you one anecdote to tell you that when you hear Mrs. Del Ponte saying that she knows that Mladic is in Serbia and she knows that Karadzic is on the frontier between Serbia, Montenegro, and Bosnia, a little story. And that's the story of the general, police general, Mr. Vlastimir Djordjevic. For 3 years, many times on record, the Hague Tribunal has said that this general is in Moscow, and there was speculation that probably there is some kind of deal between Belgrade and Russia on this topic. In the event, he was arrested, and do you know how? Well, our police conducted in July a sting operation, not the secret police, the regular police. There was an organized group which has been stealing from the toll booths. A very sophisticated, I would say, scheme by which they shed off dozens of millions of euros from the money that people were paying just to take the highway. And the lady who was actually the financial brain of all of this broke in tears and she said, "Wait a minute, I have something for you." And what she had for the police was to say where her lover, General Djordjevic, was. And in the event, he was already 3 years in Montenegro, in the city of Budva, under a fake identity, working as a construction worker. So much for the certainty, so much for all of those who know that there must be some secret deals, that exactly where this war fugitive is. So I don't think that definitely, I'm not sure that we're going to use the same method to find the remaining ones, but for sure what I can tell you is that our police, our secret police, and within the operating team which is searching for the war crime fugitives, there is a representative of the Hague Tribunal. So this team is not a black box for the international community. It's open, and if anyone has good ideas, and you have seen that our government has 3 weeks ago given an award of 1 million euro for anyone giving information in order to find General Mladic, we will be happy to proceed. So there is no doubt on our wish to do it. And so, with some ups and downs in this collaboration with the Hague Tribunal, one can say that Serbia has been a bulwark of stability for the Balkans. Let me give you a few examples. Remember that in 2001, there were terrorist attacks of Albanians in the south of Serbia, not Kosovo, but in the Preševo Valley. We lost several servicemen. We did not respond in kind. We worked with NATO, we worked with our allies, and at the end of the day, in the January 2007 elections, for the first time in 17 years, Albanians from the south of Serbia participated in the elections and have representatives in the parliament. So it can be done. The second thing, you have seen that we have had our share of problems, and when you see the attitude of Serbia on Montenegro, for instance, one-third of the Montenegrins declared themselves as Serbs, and 47% of those voting in the referendum last year voted to remain with Serbia. And there was no move, no pressure from Belgrade to try to change the outcome. And now I hear immediately people saying, well, but don't you do the same with Kosovo? Because Kosovo Metohija is part of Serbia. Montenegro was a state. Montenegro is again a state. And we respect its territorial integrity the way we do it from all other states. And there are no parallels that one can draw between Montenegro and Kosovo. And so Serbia, the democratic Serbia, and this is the fourth cabinet after the fall of Milosevic, will continue to be run, I am certain of that, in the months to come by this combination, because this is the one which does not include the radicals, the far right, which have very different ideas where Serbia should be taken. And I think that from the fall of Milosevic to the entrance to the EU that we hope to achieve by 2014, we'll be able to achieve a lot. There are dangers, and in case there's a UDI, I have to tell you, without saying, and sometimes people try to frame it in a very schematic way, saying, oh well, if we come to terms and agree, it's heaven. And if there's a UDI, Serbia turns to isolation and very unsavory forces. I'm not saying that, but the truth is that our president, Boris Tadic, is leading in the polls in front of Tomislav Nikolic, but only 55-45. It's not a huge margin, and that's before any decision on Kosovo Metohija. I cannot, nobody can predict the way that the polity will react to this, and should not play with the risk of having Tomislav Nikolic being elected president of Serbia. He was a speaker of the parliament in May for 5 days, and in those 5 days he had time to say that it's easy to implement a state of emergency. He said that Serbia should become a region of Russia. He even toyed about the ideas of maybe putting some military hardware, because his friend Vladimir Zhirinovsky thinks it's a good idea. There's no reason to test that. And if this happens, I'm not certain that the current coalition will resist. I'm not certain. What I can tell you is that we will do everything in our possibility to keep it that way. But definitely, if you do your four columns, UDI, pluses, minuses, negotiated settlement with everybody giving and pinching in, pluses and minuses, I think that the answer is very clear. As long as facts are brought to the table, not prejudice, and as long as people want truly to ensure the stability and prosperity of the entire region. You can count on the government of Serbia in the future for doing just that. The Balkans could look very much different in a few years' time, but please, help us to change that logic. Help us change the logic of confrontation and disintegration into a logic of integration and progress. Thank you very much for your kind attention.
Thank you very much, Deputy Prime Minister. I would now invite comments from the audience, and those of you who have been here before know that we will invite you to come forward. Please introduce yourself, and would you take four or five and then answer? Yeah, we'll take four or five questions or comments, and we already have the first.
Cvijeto Job, a columnist of Republika of Belgrade. Mr. Deputy Prime Minister, 6 days ago, on the 16th of this month, Your Prime Minister Vojislav Koštunica stated that, and I quote, "The United States of America is leading a brutal policy of force and is openly advocating the dismemberment of Serbia," unquote. Prime Minister Koštunica then continued, quote, "Unfortunately, this proves that the United States of America and the NATO pact cruelly and illegally bombed Serbia and brought their forces to the province in order to seize 15% of our country," unquote. This is about Kosovo. Mr. Deputy Prime Minister, do you agree with these statements of your Prime Minister?
Thank you very much. And then we'll go to that side.
Shall I go now? Sorry?
Yes, please.
Okay. Thank you very much. Sorry, and thank you very much. Dobar dan, gospodine. Dobrodošli. My name is Edward Joseph with Johns Hopkins SAIS and worked for many years in former Yugoslavia, including in Kosovo. I was deputy administrator in Mitrovica and got to know the likes of Oliver Ivanovich and Marko Jakšić and know the difference between those two. And I was also, if I could add, Deputy Prime Minister, I was in Brčko and with OSCE and worked on the decision. And it just struck me, the things that you said about the warnings about what might happen internally were this very similar to the warnings we got from Dodik and Biljana Plavšić before the Brčko decision. And of course, we know Brčko has been one of the major success stories in Bosnia, which you credit as overall being a success. And I appreciate very much your spirit that you come here and you don't want to face a lot of prejudice, and I understand that, and you emphasize facts. And I just want to convey back to you that some of us who've worked in the region, for us it's not about prejudice, it's also about facts. And the major fact for us is that what you describe, you say Serbia is ready to negotiate on everything except precisely the thing that is a sine qua non for the other side, and that's widely known, which is independence. So it's great that you're flexible on all these other issues, but you know very well, as does I'm sure everyone in this room, that that's precisely the sine qua non for Kosovar Albanians. And we've gone through this for so long that it just seems to those of us who are not prejudiced, who only want the best for Serbia and for the region, that it is fruitless to continue this charade of negotiations, not only fruitless, but dangerous. And that's one aspect, really, my central question to you is, really, how much time do you think there really is to just perpetuate negotiations that you know very well? You make the best case possible, but you know very well the position you have is not acceptable to well over 90% of Albanians, however much their population is. The second point, second question, Deputy Prime Minister, is you say that Russia is really a benign factor, not really a major factor, and yet we see very dangerous messages coming from your Prime Minister, Mr. Koštunica, talking about a third way between West and East. Yes, he's made the statement suggesting, for example, Serbia doesn't need NATO integration and casting doubt on Belgrade's commitment to even entering the EU. So, and we hear a lot of concern about potentially partition of Kosovo, which would be a disaster, as you know, for the Serbian population of Kosovo, the majority of which lives below the EBAR. So those are my questions. We don't want to be prejudiced, Deputy Prime Minister, but we too have to confront facts that really Kosovo has not progressed, and it does seem like it's more than time to come to a decision. Thank you very much.
My name is Avni Mustafa. I'm the Executive Director of the National Albanian American Council here in Washington, D.C. I'm glad that you started the presentation based on presenting facts, and I agree that, you know, there's a question of presenting facts, but also all of the facts. Now, in terms of facts, in 1991, 1998, the ethnic cleansing campaign resulted in over 12,000 people being killed, 65% of the territory of an area the size of the state of Connecticut, and you've been in the United States, so you know how large that is, and the destruction of 60% of the property in that area. So in terms of now your government going to Kosovo, if you had to go from city to city and you had to convince these people that indeed their future lied in Belgrade as a result of lying in Pristina, what would you say to them? The other thing that I would offer is that I think it's not fair to come down here and say it's the United States, it's the United States. In fact, NATO, and from what we understand, the only European countries that have not committed to Kosovo's independence are Romania, Greece, Cyprus, and Slovakia. So in terms of accepting facts, it really is a situation in which a majority of Europe has accepted something that I think was mentioned earlier, is that the only way for these two people to move together is separately but equally.
Thank you. To those points, first of all, to the statements of Mr. Job, first of all, it's a coalition. We are in a coalition. A coalition is made up of parties which are not one party. So there are differences. So what I can tell you, however, is that on the issue of Kosovo and Metohija, we are united. We're united to defend the territorial integrity, and we're united in not using force. Now, for what you have said, what I have to tell you is that for an enormous majority of our people, in case a UDI comes, it will not be seen the final act of the regime of Slobodan Milosevic. It will be seen as the loss of the Democrats. Let me tell you how it goes when I go to the parliament and I see Vucic or all those people. They say, oh, Jelic, are you back from the States? Oh, great. What's going on? When Kumanovo happened and Resolution 1244, some of you guys said this was capitulation. Oh, you wish you can keep it. What are your friends offering you exactly? What are they preparing to do? Oh, and by the way, where are your Western friends in order to integrate you in the EU and NATO? As a matter of fact, it seems like only Russia and others are supporting you. So, if I may, it is true that a more balanced approach from the United States is just the right ingredient at this point of time to help find a negotiated solution. And I'll also answer to the last point. It is not true that only four countries are against. Many more countries are pondering. And let me quote the ambassador of the United Kingdom today in Belgrade. He said, we should try to find a negotiated settlement, something in between, as he said, independence and substantial autonomy. So those are new noises, including from the United Kingdom. And from my conversations in the United States, I can also testify that definitely there is a will, maybe a small, maybe a short-lived, but a possible window of opportunity to find a negotiated settlement. I'll come back to more of your points later on. So, insofar as the U.S. and NATO are concerned, first of all, Mr. Kusturica voted, like me, in August, on government, for the presentation document for our country to enter the Partnership for Peace for NATO. So we agree to work within the framework of the Partnership for Peace. Insofar as NATO membership is concerned, because of the bombing and because of the earlier support of the NATO General Secretary in February for the Ahtisaari Plan, you cannot be surprised that it's not an extraordinarily popular organization right now in Serbia. It's just normal. If they would come out and say, we guarantee the territorial integrity of Serbia, I can tell you that NATO will be very popular. Serbs are no different. They react to stances, to statements, positions, and they look at the support and the type of people who support them. They tend to like them much more than people who say that, and that was some of the statements earlier, that no matter what, Kosovo and Metohija will be independent. And so what I have to say is that, as you see from those quotes, I would rather see them as the potential danger of, rather than keeping our country on the course of EU integration, further work in the Partnership for Peace, knowing that full membership in NATO would, like in any other country, be subject to a referendum, in the way that EU membership will be subject to a referendum. I think that precisely a more balanced approach from the US and NATO is just the ingredient needed, first of all, to not push us in one direction or another, to keep a reformist, pro-European coalition in power, rather than experimenting with some other solutions. Insofar as the facts and prejudices are concerned, well, you know, nobody talked about breaking up Bosnia. Nobody talked about taking Brčko out of Bosnia. And somehow the solutions for the very complicated problems that came out of the breakup of Yugoslavia were typically finding original setups and strengthening collective rights of minorities. That was kind of the ingredients that to some extent were helpful in Bosnia or in Macedonia, for instance. And it should be, I would say, one should ponder more about the lessons of some of the successes that have been reached through that way, rather than trying to do it kind of the 19th century way, you know, favoring one nationalism over another. You look, I mean, let's take a step back. If we come to a negotiated settlement, and then we say, Serbs and Albanians alike, dear friends, yes, there are two national questions in this part of Europe that have not been solved by aggregating everybody in one state. It's you too. And that's how it's gonna be. You like it, you don't like it. That's how it is. Focus now on reforming, focus in entering the European Union, focus at your own pace joining Euro-Atlanticist integration factors, and not pushing for the victory of the one over the other. And that's basically the gist of this whole point at this point of time. And so that will force us to something that maybe has not been necessarily the tradition in our region, to discuss, to compromise, give and take, horse trading, finding agreements, finding joint interests, promoting certain people, you know, being European. And I think what has happened is that the European Union has really came more to the fore, and that has been very helpful in the sense of helping both Russia and the United States to support more the outcome of a negotiated settlement. Now, what is dangerous? Let me tell you something. On the front page of the New York Times, there was a quote from a state secretary of the Ministry of Kosovo and Metohija, where if you would read the paper, it was written Serbia was about to use force. Of course, I called the guy. I know the guy. He's a reasonable guy, Proroković. I said, Dušan, what's going on? He said, I'm mad like hell. Because this journalist came, we spent 3 hours discussing all the things that we are ready to do and so forth. And at one point of time, he asked me, what is it in the Kumanovo agreement, which ended militarily the operations of NATO? And there, yes, there is a provision by which not the army, but 900 policemen, Serbian policemen, could come to Kosovo and Metohija for certain specific tasks, such as, for instance, keeping the monasteries and the churches. And he said that, and it ended up in the New York Times front page. And I had to explain to many people and all of us. So what I want to say, you know, to any if of any but of any shred of anybody in Belgrade saying anything, there's a huge overreaction. And now nobody, as I see, has reacted to the bunch of guys with the hoods on their heads and, you know, Kalashnikovs who has shown up the other night. Oh, that's okay. Saying ERS. And what is the incentives? Does it mean that the international community as its own is going to react to the threats of a few terrorists? Is this the way to, is this the incentives you want to provide the world around, and in particular in the Balkans? I'm not sure. The way that we're not particularly happy, you know, to see that Mr. Ramush Haradinaj was re-injected in the political life. He was Prime Minister of Kosovo when our friend was here overseeing that. And it's not us saying, it's Carlo Del Ponte. He's a war crime in IT, not only for war crimes, but also for being a leader of a mafia ring. And it's not exactly the type of personalities that you want to lead necessarily the country to a common and peaceful future. I'm not saying that we don't have extremists on our side, but Trecher, he's in The Hague already 4 years. And by the way, he's been there for 2.5 years, arrested without any proceedings starting against him. So that when they ask us, is this how human rights are protected, we have difficulty to answer. So it has not been a good idea to reject such a people, and we should actually strengthen the middle ground of the politics, both in Belgrade and Pristina. That's what needs to be done, and we should not say, oh my God, there are some extremists, and they're going to kill soldiers, because all of this is a big bluff. Where exactly where we, Serbs and Albanians, go, actually, tomorrow? We're going to just stay where we are. We need to work with the EU. We need to work with the United States. We need the support. And you can say that Pristina needs much more support than Belgrade needs, because now we are more firmly standing on our feet. So do not answer do not heed the threats of terrorists. This is a terrible and a poor policy to conduct. Listen more to the people who are elected, those who are in power in Belgrade, and hopefully, although it's not the great of times to have elections in Kosovo and Metohija, hopefully also a bit more moderate people coming up over there. So the last point was, yes, atrocities have happened. Yes, those who have committed crimes have to be punished. You're absolutely right, on all sides. It's a very poor policy to try to punish a people or a country collectively. There have been attempts at that in the history, and that has never ended in peace and harmony. And as far as the history is concerned, look, I'm one of the most moderate people there is. So it happens, my late mother was born in Kosovo, and she was ethnically cleansed during the Second World War, when Kosovo was under Albania, itself dominated by fascist Italy. And they will never let go back. I'm anti-Albanian, I'm not. But you can dig into this history a long time. It's time, I would say, to turn the logic and to try and find a negotiated settlement which will ensure peace. And we are here in the United States Institute of Peace, and I think it's a justly, termed and appropriately named institute here. Some more?
Yes, please. Could you come forward? Thank you very much. You don't mind standing? You're fine?
I'm fine.
Thank you very
Anybody
much.
Anybody else, please? Yes, please.
Mr. Deputy Prime Minister, thank you very much for your presentation today. I'm Katarina Radovic. I work for the Voice of America Serbian Service. At the beginning of your presentation, you said that you had a number of meetings here in Washington with the members of administration and Congress, and that you are cautiously optimistic. Now, again, you slightly touched upon that. Would you be at liberty to elaborate now about the reasoning behind this cautious optimism?
Well, we have moved from a situation, remember. Martti Ahtisaari was supposed to come to town and run to New York, and the resolution was to be voted, and Russians were to be placated. And on the 2nd of September, the date was set, the UNMIK was to be replaced by the European force and administration. And as we see, it has not happened. Not that we like to drag our feet, but basically I see the differences between a very biased person trying to push something which was pre-cooked versus somebody who's trying to come, as the Troika is trying to do now, to a negotiated agreement. I think that more thought was given to the consequences of both options. One, a possible negotiated solution, and two, a unilateral declaration of independence. And so when people think, then they come to fact, they look for facts, and they look for analysis. And that's exactly what's happening. So now, to your point, what has been, encouraging, I have to say, of course, from time to time, we have statements from the very top of the U.S. administration, which are frankly not very helpful. When you say, and when you see two parties still very much apart on their positions, and you say, we hope they have come to terms and agree, but if not, it's independence. If you say that, you give no incentive to the Kosovo Albanians to not even to negotiate, not to listen. But on the other hand, you don't really give much incentives to the Serbian side to come forward and propose certain things. Because by doing that, if you know it's going to be independence, you're going to expose yourself politically in the domestic forum. So that's why what is encouraging, and the statements from the United Kingdom, the fact that the unity team from Pristina was called to Washington and London and clearly was asked to refrain from any unilateral action, the fact that Frank Wiesner said that in 2007 implied there is no December 11 in terms of decisions to be taken, all of this is giving us some hope that we see an opening of an opportunity which will provide for, I would say, both sides to preserve the minimum what is very important to them. After all, you say, somebody earlier said, well, you know, it's too late, it's independent. Who says? Who says? Think about the consequences of everything. So I think this new approach, letting, I would say, the Troika, and with the support of Russia and the United States, is starting to yield some results. Concretely, those are the 14 points on which neither clearly Pristina nor Belgrade can agree, but it's an element on which, obviously, one is going to build. So I'm an optimist by nature, and maybe you feel that. And often people say it's impossible to be an optimist in the Balkans. Also people say, you know, the old saying that a pessimist is only a better informed optimist. And I say, an optimist is only a very resolute pessimist. So that's how I see it, rather.
Thank you. I'm Vladimir Karamurza with Russian television. How do you assess the Russian government's position on the Kosovo and Metohija issue? Is it helpful? Is it unhelpful? And secondly, in case of UDI, how concerned are you about the cultural and religious heritage of Christianity in Kosovo and Metohija, Christian churches, Christian monasteries? Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I have to say that Serbia is highly appreciative of the position of the Russian Federation. And you remember what has been said. It was said, well, it's like posturing, and then at the end of the day, they'll cut a deal on something else. I mean, to put it in a pretty blunt and crass terms, but that's how it was. And at the end of the day, we see that it's a principled position based on international law, which is trying to do precisely what I think a very important power, as Russia, has a mandate to do, is to think about consequences around the world. It goes beyond the capacity of Serbia, but yes, we do have a common interest in here. And when sometimes some people try to draw a parallel from sometimes between certain sounds from Moscow and Washington, let me just repeat what has been said. There have been voices in Washington saying, if no agreement, independence. Russia did not say, we favor the Serbs. They said, we will accept only something that the two parties have agreed upon. So they are not taking sides, but they are pushing for an agreement. And we believe that that's the right way to go. And it's not only Romania, Cyprus and others, although we highly value their position as well, and as you can see, there are good reasons why they are reacting that way. There are many other European countries, I'll quote you a few, the Netherlands, who cannot necessarily be seen as systematically pro-Serbian, right, when you look at the last 15 years, has said that they will not accept a solution which is coming out of the United Nations Security Council. You have Germany, and you know, I'm going to the SPD Congress this Saturday, where you will see the platform, basically for Germans, going with military hardware in a situation where Europe is not united and there is no UN backing, is something which is extremely difficult and uncomfortable for them. They might not go that way. So I think it's an overall situation, and hopefully all of that will provide for a better solution.
The Christian heritage,
well, about 150 monasteries from the 12th to the 14th century have been torched. The reason why the Albanian side never wants to say Kosovo and Metohija is Metohija, you have a clear Christian heritage in that. Clearly, there's absolutely no doubt that from the fact that it was the center of our church, it is the center of our church. In Peć, the fact that the establishment of the state of Serbia was done there. The presence, the eradication of the churches is another way of doing ethnic cleansing. It is to try to do it. And the last case was in March of 2004, where about 7,000 people were ethnically cleansed and about 20 monasteries were destroyed. And to this day, not a single person, for all of that you have been mentioning, has stand trial. Not a single one. And I was in Osojane, which is an enclave not far away from Kosovska Mitrovica, and there's about 1,000 Serbs who came back after being ethnically cleansed in 99. They came back, peasants, people, you know, kids, and I asked them, well, how is it going? Do you have contacts with the Kosovo Albanians? They said, the one we have, they tell us December 11. So we should not have this logic of one will win over the other. We should definitely try to have a different. And I think that definitely the Kosovars have not demonstrated since 99 the respect of the standards. I'm not speaking, it's the UN mission that went there and discussed that. So what does it mean? It means that there's no evils, there's no angels, it's just people putting valid claims on similar things, and they have to come to terms and to agree.
I think that's
right
first, and then, yes, please.
Thank you. My name is Marta Verbetic. I'm affiliated with the Center for International Security Studies at Maryland. I come from Croatia, and I must say I understand the I come from Croatia, and I must say I understand both the Albanians' drive for independence, but as an international relations scholar, I also understand the Serbian position. And I have a concern that goes just beyond. I understand the problems in Kosovo and the need for regional stability and the possibility of impact on Bosnia, and the other hand that we cannot keep Albanians like this forever. But my concern is what will be the larger international consequences if we have a recognition of Kosovo without negotiated settlement. I'm thinking about Iraq and I'm thinking about the larger consequences. And that's why I'm concerned. And so my question is, were there any attempt or maybe would your government consider to let go of Kosovo? There would be some substantial economic and diplomatic incentives. So we do have a negotiated settlement, which I think would be preferable, not just for the region, but for larger, for other conflict areas in the world.
Mm-hmm. Would you let Istria go if Italy gives you €1 billion? Would the United States accept for a richer Mexico a deal for to purchase the south of California? Why did the United Kingdom go to war and spend £19 billion for a few islands in the middle of the Atlantic next to Argentina? In other words, certain things cannot be compared. No, Serbia is not going to be kind of enticed or bribed in this. There is no deal Europe for Kosovo. By the way, I think from the European Union, they fully understand that trying kind of to exert some concessions on Kosovo in order to accelerate Europe will not yield results, because you will not find anybody who would accept that. You will only weaken the reformists, because you will be putting them onto a spot from which they will either flee or they would get, if they accept, killed, you know, because it's enough for a few crazies. Or you will basically completely derail the internal political thing. So I think the way that you say, I think the concern now is really to try to avoid, I guess, from the international community, those dangerous precedents. As far as Serbia is concerned, we do not have that capacity. We are not a superpower. We are just looking at the way to have a quiet, stable neighborhood so that we can all focus in joining the EU, continue to making this economic progress the way that Croatia has been doing too. And so the negotiated settlement, and, you know, there are already some ideas which are floated. So maybe if I can add to the discussion a few ideas, you know. There are papers floating around saying, let's have a confederation. Let's do CIS, you know, the way, the thing that inherited the Soviet Union. Or let's play Serbia and Kosovo the way that Serbia and Montenegro was played. And I'd like just to explain why this is not acceptable to Belgrade. This will be actually the way by which Serbia will be de facto granting independence to Kosovo and Metohija. A solution by which they have the same international status is the way to pave that. So when somebody says Serbia and Kosovo in the way Serbia and Montenegro, I said, thank you, but this movie has played in our theaters last year. So that's definitely something which basically does not exhaust the possibilities. After all, there are many examples around the world. And there is a little bit of goodwill. One can find a complex reality which de facto is this unique case that can, in a way that, for instance, Dayton was a unique case when it was built, again, has provided, for all its faults, 12 years of peace and now beginnings of some modest prosperity. So let's try. And the way I said to Mr. Dan Frinas, I said, we can do better. It's the time, and we are aware that it's the time to come forward with those, as he said, creative ideas.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Deputy Prime Minister. My name is Nina Bong Jensen. I'm with the Public International Law and Policy Group. You've commented already on some of the difficulties that come from being in a coalition government. And certainly from the outside, there have been some starkly different comments made by senior members of your government. There seems to be very little common ideology or foreign policy, with some exceptions. But my question goes more to the issue of operational issues. Do you have confidence, and so why should we have confidence, that you would be told, as your party was not told in the past, by the security services and by the defense ministry, where Ratko Mladic and Radovan Karadzic are? And would you know if the arrest was possible or not?
Well, it's a coalition, but then again, it was formed after agreeing on five key principles. The first is to keep the territorial integrity of our country. The second one is to collaborate with the Hague Tribunal. The third is to accelerate our European integration. The fourth is to fight crime and organized and corruption and organized crime. And mind you, Serbia has been making great strides in this. It's a it's another success story, which of course is not so much for public consumption, but I can tell you that we've been doing a lot. And the last one, of course, is improving living standards. So if you look at the end of the day, what counts is deeds. What counts is deeds.
Great.
And at the end of the day, one should take Serbia to the deeds. It's much more important, right?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, words are important in politics, not to inflame passions, because then words translate into deeds. And I think overall, look at the 7 years, in Serbia, look what has happened, has been very reasonable. And I think that at this point of time, one cannot be surprised. I mean, you read every statement, but you should read also the statements on the side of Pristina. You should read some of the statements of some, statesmen, stateswomen in the world. I mean, they are kind of providing definite statements on Serbia, on the fact that we should be punished for Milosevic, on the fact that it's too late, on the fact that we are not adhering to European principles. So we are on the receiving end of a lot of rhetoric too. So I'm not saying that that we talk the exact same language always, but definitely the action of the government is something which leads to unity. Let me give you a few examples to illustrate my point. Anything which has to do with important security issues is being dealt by the National Security Council of Serbia. It is headed by the President of the Republic, Boris Tadic. The Prime Minister is part of that. The Ministers of Interior and Defense are part of that. So de facto, all of that is done together between the two major parties making this our government, the Democratic Party of Boris Tadic and the Democratic Party of Serbia of Vojislav Koštunica. So we are going to that path. Anything we do, I would say, in any circumstances, any scenario possible around Kosovo or other things, is something which is subject to debate and to agreement. And so, yes, there are differences, but at the end of the day, I'm confident we will find an appropriate way to go forward. And we agree on, somebody said earlier that Mr. Koštunica is not for European integration. That's not true. That's not true. It's a clear plank of their program, and they will, with us, go forward. The difference is that they changed their program after the statements from NATO in their program to indicate that they are not for the integration into NATO. And somebody else said that's not a way to go forward earlier, so I take this opportunity to say, you know, there are also EU members who are not NATO members. There are NATO members who are not EU members. It's not the same. We will see in the years to come. Now, to your point, look, I often talk with the people in charge of that. And if again, as I said in my introductory remarks, sometimes people, I'm telling you, we are aware of not only our international obligations, but we also are aware that it is something that we have to do. Because if one asks for justice for the Serbian victims, one has also to provide means for the justice for those who think they have been victims at the hands of some Serbs to be done. And the real politic is that definitely also the standing of Serbia at this point of time, also on the issue of Kosovo, will be strengthened definitely with an extradition of General Mladic. That's no secret. So they are doing what they can. And as I said, the Hague Tribunal has representatives in this operating team. And if anyone from them or others have a good idea, that's why there's a €1 million award for those who come up with credible information, is more than welcome. But you know, it's been now 8 years that the most powerful country in the world is looking after Osama bin Laden. 8 years. And for the 10 years after the Dayton Accords, the whole international community, we are told, have been looking for Radovan Karadžić. So, you know, I'm not saying, but it's not something which is necessarily easy to do. And you look at the Nazis that have been fleeing and 50 years to trying to find some of them, you know, there is not a lack of will. And there's not a lack of allocation of resources on the side of Serbia to do it. And I hope we will as the English say, the proof is in the pudding, right? So
you feel fully confident that the security services have been reformed and that the post-Milosevic era has happened there as well?
It's happening.
Thank you. I think we'll take now the last question, because I think the Deputy Prime Minister has been working very hard here for a long time. So one last intervention.
Deputy Prime Minister, thank you for being here with us today. My name is Daniela Friedl, and I'm a PhD, Johns Hopkins Science University, and a security analyst for Riskline International. First of all, I want to congratulate you and applaud you for all your efforts. I know that Serbia has been under a lot of pressure and still is, and it takes a lot to stand at the front lines and do what you do, so you make me proud. So thank you for that. I see you as a visionary. So where do you see Serbia 5, also 10 years down the road?
You know, we will, if we start with this most difficult of issues, in a very original institutional setup with Kosovo Metohija. Busily, both Belgrade and Pristina meeting and saying, oh, look at those Eurocrats, what they ask for. Preparing certain projects together to get financing, in particular in the area of energy. Serbia, by that time, would have done the following things. We would have, in the area of electricity, on the basis of our current company apps, created a regional leader, the way that the Czechs have been successful, very successful, with CEZ. We would be exporting significant amount of electricity. Hopefully, we would be the path of a major natural gas pipeline, I hope, a common EU-Russian project, which will allow us to collect significant transit fees and also provide a better environmentally friendly energy and more competitive energy sources for our industry. We would be, because of the crossing roads of Danube Corridor 10, and then a very important road now, which is going from Croatia to Romania through the Vojvodina, because there's a lot of investment going along that path, being at the center of many clusters of traditional industries. We would by then be able to repatriate, to do a reverse brain drain of at least 20 to 30,000 of some of our best and brightest, and because money follows brains, we'll have a lot of, and our fair share of the knowledge economy, both in software, but also in pharmaceuticals and in biotech. We would be a country where regional differences will be much smaller than the current ratio of 1 to 8 when you look at unemployment rates or pay between the most successful parts of Belgrade and the poorest part of our country. We would be the logistical center of the Balkans because of the cargo center and the fast train and then the hauling through the highways that finally would have finalized. You know, we politicians sometimes like to coin phrases, but you'll smile when I say that the way that in Serbia they smile. I say we're going to be the Dubai of the Balkans, because people think Dubai is the place where you go to shop and to do some offshore financing. And as a matter of fact, people don't realize that the sturdiness of Dubai comes from the fact that they are the logistical center of the Persian Gulf. And then finally, we will be still winning in tennis. Thank you.
I will, just say a few words. I will certainly not abuse of my position as moderator today, and evidently I appreciate enormously, as you do, all the frankness, the candor, the direct statements by the Deputy Prime Minister. I think that has been extremely informative and helpful. But allow me just to make two comments, Deputy Prime Minister. One, because you referred directly to me in the case of Ramush Haradinaj. You said he was Prime Minister while I was Administrator of Kosovo. Yes, he was elected Prime Minister by the people of Kosovo, and that was a democratic process. But I must say that I cannot quite agree with the description that he is a war criminal. I think that there's a process going on, and that process will determine what he is. I think the very fact that he cooperated and voluntarily went off to The Hague in order to answer all the points in the indictment will give us a chance to see what he is.
And may God help the 7 souls that have been killed.
Right. No, I just want to, I think as you, as a good Democrat and all that, I think it's important we also respect justice. The second point is, if I may just You did refer to Mr. Ahtisaari, as I understood it, as a very biased person. I think what you meant is that the proposal, in your view, could be seen as very biased. But again, I think we all respect sort of the former Finnish president as a very objective person and a very wise statesman. You have problems with the his proposal, which
he's
we...
He's on record that Serbia should be punished.
Okay.
So that's not a very unbiased statement.
And finally, let me just say, I don't have all my notes that I normally had with me when I went to the Security Council, because I knew the points that would be coming up. And I knew that every time I was there, and the ambassador was there many times, the point of March 2004, for very good reasons, would be raised. But then there would also be these constant statements that nobody has been brought to justice, nobody is in prison for what they did. I don't have the facts here, and one should always be extremely careful with facts. But I can say that more than 10, I think it was 19, have been sentenced, are in jail right now. Some of them receive sentences, if I'm not wrong, of at least 12 years for the crimes they committed
if
in March.
I was precise. I said not for the war crime necessarily, but for the torching of the churches and so forth.
No, they have been sentenced and they are in jail right now. Having said that, I fully agree with you. Those days were most deplorable and all that. But I just think it's important that we get the facts right. And finally, if I can depart one moment from Kosovo and Serbia, you referred Deputy Prime Minister several times to Bosnia, and you described it 12 years of peace and successful. I think that there are those who might not quite agree. We are all very, very pleased that there is peace. But on the other hand, it is a fact that of all the countries of the former Yugoslavia, the country, unfortunately, that has made the least progress in terms of integration into Europe is, and I say again, unfortunately, Bosnia, where they are still struggling with major difficulties. We hope they get it right. I would, for one, argue that Dayton was very good in that it stopped the war, it stopped the human suffering, but Dayton did not address the root causes. And therefore, Bosnia, 12 years after, is still struggling to pull together. Having said all that, I want to finish again by thanking you very much. One of your publications is a book, I understand, quote, Serbia, Things Will Get Better. I think that your next book, based on what you were telling us today, would be Things Are Getting Better. And we wish you all the best.
Thank you. Thank you. So you can play